Hello, everybody. I am Mark, and I am a grateful recovering addict. I'm only up here. If you listen closely, I have an accent, all right? I'm only up here because I made meetings consistently. Before I go on to share my experience, my strength, and my hope, I want to thank the committee, the European Committee. And I basically want to thank two people. I'm going to say the word I want to say, all right? I'm not a guy that dresses things up. I tell it like it is. And all my New Yorkers are sitting right over here. And I'll say this. I grew up in the best area in the world. Now, if you don't like that, they would say, go call your sponsor. I got tough love when I came to New York City. I want to thank Tuga, Andre. Where's Andre? I love you, brother. I want to thank my brother Martin. And I'll say this. And I'm going to thank more people sitting in this room right here, right now. Because I'm only here because of them. I'm not here because I live the steps. I'm not here because I know the traditions. I'm not here because I know the concepts. I'm here because I look at people, I listen to people, and that's how I grew up, and I got faith and courage to step up here. So, I didn't do this by myself, right? Now, I'm going to tell you my story, and maybe along the line, I'll give you some indicators about how I used to be and where I'm at now. It's a world of difference. A world of difference. I couldn't see it for many, many years. But the people sitting in this room right here, right now, there are certain people, when I see them, they're not my close one-on-one buddies. They're not that. I don't call them every day. They don't call me every day. But when I see them, some of them are my predecessors. And what I was taught in Narcotics Anonymous in New York City is to appreciate those predecessors. Because if it were not for those guys sitting in those rooms at the time that I walked in, and I didn't believe that I knew I couldn't use one of anything. I knew that. But I didn't think I could live life without the use of drugs. Right? So when I mention some guys' names and some ladies' names, I'm not doing it because I'm separating principles from personalities. I'm sharing that my intent behind that is to let the newcomers know and let them what we used to call down in St. Mark's, repeat offenders. And who's a repeat offender? Is somebody that goes in and goes out and goes in and goes out and goes in and goes out. So I want to welcome you guys. I just met a newcomer who's my friend's son. He's sitting right there, Lee. He's got 2 years clean. And when I see anybody with a day clean, there was somebody that I was in a meeting earlier on, he had 23 days. 23 days. For me, the miracle was if I could stay clean for an hour, for a minute. So there, I want to name some of my predecessors. Al is sitting right in front of me, the guy with the long hair, right there. Stand up, Al. This is my personal appreciation. These are the people that accepted me for who I was. No money, no property, no prestige. Lou, sitting right there. Lou, you don't mind standing up, brother? Yo, I said I'm going to call you out, man. All right? So, Lynn is somewhere back there. I don't know where Lynn is. I'm getting old now. I'm 71 now. And my eyes are kind of, you know, deteriorating a day at a time. But Lynn was back there. Fern is right there. If you don't mind, Fern. I know I'm not trying to point you out, but I just want to appreciate. Thank you. Thank you. Who else? My mind is getting old now. Oh, how can I forget? This man, I used to be at Bleecker Street, right? Bleecker Street was my home group for many years. And one day I'm sitting in the meeting, and I'm a kind of guy, if you're behind me and you start to share, and I can't see your face, I will turn around and look at you. Why? Because I made the emotional connection, not the physical connection, not the spiritual connection, the emotional connection. And my brother CJ is sitting with his tie-dye t-shirt like he always does. And I looked around and I turned around. At that time, CJ had long hair. And I'll tell you something. When I got clean, I loved those guys with the long hair. Because I had long hair too. And I still have my long hair. Right? I don't want to give up that junky rock and roll look. I still love it. Right? CJ, my brother, I know a lot of people know you. But I'm still going to ask you to stand up, bro. And this is how my higher power works, right? I'm on the plane, and I wear only NA shirts. I don't wear polo necks, and I don't wear all that Gucci stuff. I am a recovering addict, and I'm a very proud recovering addict. And when I was coming on the plane, and the guy in the immigration stopped me. I said, why did you come to Canada? Canada, I'm sick. Why did you come to Amsterdam? What are you here for? I said, I'm here for a Narcotics Anonymous convention. And he looked at me. And I started to dance, man. I said, yeah, man, I'm a junkie. And I'm here clean. And I'm here to share at a Narcotics. I didn't tell him I was here to share, but I told him I came to a Narcotics Anonymous convention. He said, welcome. This is how my higher power works, right? So I get on the airplane, and I'm walking down the aisle to the last seat in the back. And of course I got my NA t-shirt on, and I'm proud, like I said, right? And this brother, I'm walking across the through the aisle, and he sees me with my NA t-shirt. So he reaches out to me. We have two words because we're getting ready to take off, right? We have two words. His name is Ed. He's sitting right there behind the man in the pink shirt. If you don't mind, Ed, please stand up, man. Thank you. I love you, man. And then I'm walking around over here in the venue. I'm hanging out. I'm clean. I'm happy, joyous, and free. I got no bills to pay. My wife is happy I'm away. I like that too. She's happy I'm aware. I ain't codependent on her, and she ain't codependent on me. Because she knew me when I was in high school, and she was my first real, you know what I mean. I'm going to be decent now. All right? Otherwise, I can be very indecent, man. And my wife, and I'm walking around here, and I have this uncanny ability, all right? I don't know, it's a gift maybe. Maybe I take people's inventory. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I'm human, right? But when I take their inventory, I also look at my inventory at the same time. And I ask myself, Mark, what's the intent? Why did you do that? So I'm like hanging out. I see this guy. He walks across me. He's coming into some place, and I'm like, yo, you're from the U.S., right? He says, yeah. I said, give me a fucking hug, man. And he's Chris. He's sitting right there, but he's from Mexico now. Chris, if you don't mind, brother. Thank you. And a beautiful lady, he's accompanied by a beautiful lady. Pam, is that right? Thank you. So, that is my emotional and spiritual connection to the human race. Yes, I'm a junkie. 100%. But you know what? I learned in Narcotics Anonymous. I am who I am. And I can't change that. But as a longtime member of Narcotics Anonymous, I changed because people loved me and accepted me for who I was. And I'll tell you something. When I came here, I got here in 1988. I was from, now get ready. Get ready. All right? I told you to listen to my accent, right? And some guys say, oh, you sound like British. Oh, you sound like this. Oh, you sound like that. And you know what I was doing? I was investigating. Would you accept me for the way I sounded? For the way I looked? And that was my second step. Because when I came here, like I said, I was a thoroughbred junkie. And I was looking for Wayne's every single day. And like it says in the basic text, the drugs stopped working. And it also says in the basic text, one of my favorite lines in the basic text, when I first came around was, we became prisoners of our own mind. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, bro? I'm a prisoner of my own mind. You must be out of your mind, man. And I also heard something which I love and I don't deny. I'm a legend in my own mind. Yes, I am. I want to be Frank Zappa. I want to be Jimi Hendrix. I want to be Jim Morrison. I want to be everybody except me. And you heard my accent, right? I'm going to break it to you. I was born in Bombay in 1954. Now, if you don't know where Bombay is, it's on the west coast of India. And I would go to all the freaking meetings down in St. Mark's, up in Harlem, because I had to get those guys to accept me for who I was, because I was down with the, and I tell it like it is, with the white people, and the black people, and the Spanish people. And I'm like, what the fuck? Where are the fucking Indians, man? And I was like, yo, we got a lot of drugs in India, bro. What the fuck? Where? I wasn't even aware of who I was and where I was. So sometimes when I hear these people with 2 days and 23 days raising their hand in the meeting, I'm like, oh, man, you got some balls and courage, man. I didn't have that. I was so afraid that people would reject me the minute they saw me and the minute they heard my voice. So, of course, I try to sound like I was an American. You know what I'm saying? I'm a good actor. I'm a manipulator. I know that. And I try to hide behind that. And I love my New York City. Because I shared it like it is, right? And then one day somebody came up to me after the meeting and said, Mark, we know you're from India, bro. I was like, what? You really know I'm from India? You're lying to me, man. And you know what? We talk about finding a place to belong. I found a place to belong in Narcotics Anonymous. Regardless, it's in one of our readings. Age, race, sexual identity, religion, or lack of religion. Now, I've been hearing this for thousands of years. Thousands of years. But as an addict, I had to find out for myself. And how I found out for myself was going to Harlem, going to Brooklyn, going to the 35th Street meeting, Lou, between Park and Madison, where all these Gucci big shots that worked in the corporate world were there. And I was still looking with my long hair and my torn jeans and my faded jeans because that's how I grew up. I loved that look. And I was waiting for somebody to reject me. And you know what my brother said to me? Mark, you're not looking for anybody to reject you. You're rejecting yourself. You're looking for... See, I always had an excuse, a blame. I always wanted to blame somebody for my addiction. That's why I say I'm so grateful that I grew up in New York City. Because they said to me, Mark, keep the blame and focus on yourself. I was like, what? That black lady behind the counter didn't smile at me when I got to the counter, but she was smiling at that other guy. How come she ain't smiling at me? And everybody said, Mark, keep the blame and focus on yourself. I blame Mom. I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. My dad was alcoholic. Used to beat my mother up in front of me. I'm the biggest child in the family and the only son in the family with three younger sisters. And I want to blame my drug addiction on all that was going on in the household. I really did. But the day I found that one hit, and I started off with ganja, right? And I started off with hashish. The day I found heroin, all my problems were diminished. No mom, no dad. I didn't give a flying fuck for nobody. Right? So I'm not going to tell you my war story because that's easy. And if you don't know what war story is, that's what we got down in St. Mark's many, 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 many years. Because all the guys that were eating out of garbage cans and sleeping in the subway system tunnels, I got to see them. And my disease tells me, oh, you're unique. You didn't suffer. Oh, they didn't suffer like you suffered. Because my disease wants to tell me that I'm the only guy that went through what I went through, and you don't know my pain. So that makes me unique, right? And that's how I grew up, man. So when I was making these meetings and I got married to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't have any self-esteem when I got clean. So I couldn't look at a woman. I couldn't look at a woman. If a woman came and sat near me, I would turn my back like that. I would look the other way. I was so scared. I was scared of being rejected, right? But like I said, I rejected myself. And I'm so grateful I got married to Narcotics Anonymous. I made meetings on a consistent basis. I didn't have a life. I didn't have a wife. I didn't have a girlfriend. I didn't have nothing. I only had me and my buddies in Narcotics Anonymous. And when we got over with the meeting, this is like an awakening of love, right? Because I believe nobody loved me. But then I learned that, you know what? I didn't love me. So I was always projecting my internal stuff to the outside. Like they say, you know, I can't project my, I can't tell you my insides by you know, your outsides. Because they said to me, keep the focus on yourself, bro. If you're thinking something of somebody, that means you're really thinking that about yourself. But you want to put the blame out there. So when I started making these meetings and I got married to NA, and after the meeting, very few guys, they would say, oh, the newcomer is the most important person. Reach out to the newcomer. Go give them your number. And I wasn't a newcomer. I was about 13 months clean when I moved to New York City. I got clean in Bombay in 87, 88. And I don't even remember my clean date. Because I was so gone, right? Sometimes I don't know how people remember their clean dates. I'm like, yo, I don't remember my clean date, man. I remember I was locked up in a rehab for 10 months. I came out of the rehab. I got on the plane. I stayed in Bombay for three months. And I got on a plane. And that's how I count my clean time. I turn it back to the day I left the rehab. But I know I was in the rehab for 10 months. Right. And I use in the rehab, Chris. I use in the rehab. And all the rehabs knew me. All of them knew me. I said, Mark, you can't come in here. Because if you come in here, you got to give us a commitment that you're going to stay clean. And guess what? I was paying them to get me clean. And still they said that shit to me. I wasn't paying them. My sister was paying them. My mother was paying them. And I'm only standing here today because of my mother. And my dad, too. This is the only reason I'm here. And the biggest, greatest reason I'm here is because of all you guys. Because you accepted me for who I was, regardless of how I sounded, what I looked like, what I dressed like, what I smelled like. None of that shit mattered. What mattered was I identified with you, you identified with me, I found myself in you, and I guess you found yourself in me. Because like I was saying, after the meeting, somebody would come up to me and say, hey, Mark, what are you doing tomorrow, man? I'm like, I don't know. I think I'll make a meeting tomorrow. And he said, yeah. He pulled out the meeting list. He said, I'm going to this meeting tomorrow. You're going to be there? I said, yeah. You want me to be in a meeting with you? There's something wrong with you, man. That's how much self-esteem I had about myself. That nobody wanted me around. Because that was in my active addiction. Even the guys that were shooting up dope with me and doing all that shit and shooting all those speedballs, when they see me coming down the street, they say, oh shit, Mark's come, let's get out. And they were gone. And I used to give them all my dope when I had money. I had a good job. I had lots of money when I was a young guy. I had a great job. And that job was got to me because of my mother. My mother was a very well-known person in Bombay. So she just picked up the phone and said, hey, my son needs a job. I got the job. I knew mom did that for me. I knew my mom could do that for me. So I knew I'm a manipulator. I know how to do my shit, right? So the guys would see me and they would like, see you later, later, bro, later. I said, oh, shit, what the fuck? When I had the money, I was giving you lines, right? Now I don't have the money, and you're walking away. Give me one, man. Give me one. I just want to get straight, man. I want to get straight. He quit. And I'll say this. I was the worst junkie from all of them. They never shot up. I used to shoot up. Guess what, Al? I'm still alive. Most of them have passed. And that's only because of this fellowship. Only because of this fellowship. So it doesn't matter what or how much you use or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem. I'm still married. My wife knows that. When I got married to my wife, and guess what? We didn't get married like in a church with all that, you know, gala and all that shit. I want to say this. I want to tell you my story. She was my first real woman I could do anything with. And we were in high school. And I was using in high school. I started using in the 6th or 7th grade. I didn't graduate from high school. And I went to a good Catholic school in Bombay. And that's the reason why I speak the English the way I speak it, because I went to a good Jesuit school. And I'm not promoting Jesuit schools, but I went to a good school, one of the best schools. Right? And my wife was my... Because my parents were pretty liberal, so she used to come home and we used to have fun. My parents were very liberal. Right, because my mom was a Parsi and my dad was a Roman Catholic, so we didn't live the cultural way. You know, we were like very free, and mom and dad had parties every freaking weekend and all the alcohol. So I grew up seeing all that shit, and I remember I used to pick up the small cups and you know whatever alcohol was remaining in there. Mom would tell me, "Pick up the cup and take it to the kitchen." I pick up the cup. That's how I started up. That's how I started up. I watched mom and dad. And today I'm a father. You think I came into Narcotics Anonymous wanting to be a father? I wanted to be the gigolo, baby. I want to have 3 women at one time. I want all the best looking women. I didn't care for the money. I wanted the best bodies around me, right? That's why I say, thank God I heard that first suggestion in Narcotics Anonymous. Make 90 meetings in 90 days. If you don't pick it up, you won't get high. I make a meeting and call your sponsor. I was like, call my sponsor? I come from a spiritual country. The fuck am I going to call my sponsor for? All the white people are coming to India for spirituality. I'm the spiritual guru over here. I should say, share this shit openly. Openly. Because I didn't want to hide nothing from nobody. Like they say, my deepest, darkest secrets will take me out of here. So I had to face myself. And if I break down the word fears, fuck everything and run, or face everything and recover. Right? So that's how I grew up. I grew up with the school of hard knocks, man. So what happened was, this was my girlfriend from high school. And I was using. And she really loved me. She wanted to be with me. But I was using so hard. And one day she said, in 1972, she said, I'm done. Go your way. She came back into my life in 1996, after so many years. 72 to 96, I don't know how many years that is, but all I'm saying is, you know, when I came here, I wanted a lot of things. I wanted a good woman. I wanted lots of money. I wanted recognition. I wanted the best car in the world. I wanted the best motorcycle in the world. I believe I'm a good musician. I'm a drummer. I want to be a drummer of some freaking rock and roll band. And I'm so grateful that none of that. And guess what? I wanted all that stuff, but I didn't want to work for it. I wanted it to be given to me free. I'm clean now. You should appreciate the fact that I'm clean. Give it to me. You know, I put the drugs down. And I was into my 10th year of recovery, and I got this wife. And of course, we had sex, right? We met after so many years. I used to write her letters every year, at least 4 or 5 letters every year. And she wouldn't write me a letter back, not even once. But I kept trying. I pursued, right? Like I learned in the fellowship. Pursue. Do it. I kept writing. And then she would send me a Christmas card. And then eventually one day I got her to come over. She came over. And of course we had great sex, right? And I thought I was still shooting blanks, right? And she got a baby. I was like, what? And she was back home in Bombay. And she calls me and said, Mark, I'm pregnant. I said, pregnant? What the fuck are you talking about? She said, I'm coming back. I said, come back. I didn't plan any of this. This is my third step. This is my third step. Like I was saying, I want everything for nothing. Just give it to me. I'm a nice guy. I used to be a bad guy. I'd rob you. I'd steal you. I'd threaten you. Today I'm not doing those things. So I'm a nice guy. I was coming to this part of my recovery. I put the drugs down. I learned how to put them down and let them stay down. That is what I learned in Narcotics Anonymous. I did many detoxes, cold turkeys, what we used to call back in those days in the 60s and 70s. I used to have a lot of hippie friends from all parts of the world that were my friends that would come to Bombay. And the best heroin was available out there. And I would tell all my New Yorkers, you use the ones with all the cut. My dope was 85% pure, baby. And these guys would laugh, man. And I'm saying this. If I could use without the pain, misery, and the suffering, trust me, Chris, I'd freaking use. Because I love drugs. But the drugs don't love me. Right? And this has been my process. Now, I'm going to get into the real person that I hadn't seen. 10 years I was hanging out with the boys, making all the conventions, going to all the workshops, speaking here, speaking there. Mark, come on here, man. We need you to come and speak here. And I was like, became a legend in my own mind. I'm the best. Like when I was a drug addict, I used the best drugs. I only wanted the best drugs. I didn't want no cut. I didn't want no bullshit. Give me the best shit, man. So that same mentality, that same behavior started to emerge in my clean time. You know, we talk about having a pink cloud, right? I'm blessed that I had a pink cloud and I had the support of all these guys. All of these. Bro, I started to drive right in New York City. I first worked for a taxi company in New York City. I used to do all the administrative work, all the accident claims from the insurance companies. I knew all that shit. And there was a good part of me. There's a part of me that was very, very friendly and very loving and very caring. So when I'd go to all these big government agencies, I got the work done like that. They saw me and they said, come on, Mark. Right. But the money wasn't good enough. So I started driving a cab. I don't know how many of you guys drive a cab. But you drive a yellow cab in New York City? That job is even tougher than a police officer's job. I heard 2 days ago, 3 days ago before I left, a New York City driver got shot in the Bronx. That's a dangerous job. And what makes it more dangerous is my arrogance, my belligerence. These are not part of my vocabulary when I was using. Arrogance? I'm a nice guy. How are you going to say I'm arrogant? I love you. You know, we talk about the sixth step. One of my favorite steps, not the fourth, not the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh. Because now Mark was a few years clean. And he was like taking everybody's inventory. Like I said, I'm a legend in my own mind. And I needed, I didn't know at this time, this is not an intellectual program. This is not for me. Because we have a think sign placed upside down in our rooms. And I was told, like, don't think your way into recovery. Act your way into recovery. When I got clean, there was only the basic text. These men are there. These men are all there. No other book. It was just the basic text and the guys and the girls that kept me clean. And I'm not a step writing guy. I'm a guy that will do what I want to do when I want to do it. I don't give a flying fuck. And that's how I learned about being willful. Taking my will back. So I was a legend in my own mind, right? Now you got Porsches, like you got good cars up here, right? I'm watching. I'm a car guy. I like all the race cars. I like all the Audis, the Mercedes, the BMWs, you know. I'm like, yeah, you got an Audi, I'll show you what the fuck I can do to you with my little Toyota Camry. I couldn't see reality for what it was. I was living in my own little world of fantasy. I'm the best driver. All right, you got a nice car, but you got to have driving skills. Like me. I'll put you in a hole, man. I'll put you in the subway. Belligerence, arrogance took me to anger. I know many people don't talk about anger. I was very angry. After 10, 11 years clean, after that pink cloud started to dissipate and move away, and reality started hitting me in the face, I didn't like reality. I'll give you a very simple example, right? There's another character defect I call self-righteousness. I judge people. So I'm on the road. And in New York City in those days, you had four lanes going up the avenue. Four big, beautiful lanes. And we are flying up the avenue 60 miles an hour. Now they got us down to 30 miles an hour. At the 60 miles an hour, bro, I'd be snaking through traffic. Cutting MFs off, man. Oh, fuck yourself, yo. Oh, fuck you. I became so self-righteous. And I forget who I am and where I come from, right? That's my disease. So I'm driving. And I got guys in front of me. Some yellow cab drivers. I didn't like yellow cab drivers. Because I didn't live my dream of going back to university like I wanted to. And I did go back to university and I started my studies, but like they say, I'm an addict. Whatever I start up, I never finish. I drop it by the wayside. I drop it. The only thing I've done right ever since I got into this fellowship is stay clean. That's my degree. I've stayed clean. And because I stayed clean, I got a chance to take a look at myself and how I was behaving. Like they said to me, Mark, if you don't change the person that brought you in here, that same person's going to take you back out. I was like, really? That same person's going to take me back out? But I don't want to use. And they start talking about feelings. Like, feelings? I started to put the whole picture together. If I felt bad about something, if I felt you disrespected me, I was coming for you. I was going for your jugular. No matter how big you were, no matter how tall you were, no matter how strong you were, I would just go. And see, God has a funny way of working. My higher power is sitting right here. You're the example of how this program worked for you. And if I say, oh man, I'm just like that, I go call him. We'll get his number. My higher power is all you guys. But there's a difference between my will and God's will. And I'm going to tell you something that I love. And it works how and why on the 11th step. It talks about what's God's will for us. And the next line is, the very best thing I would want for myself. What do I want for myself? I'm clean. But I'm angry. And guilt and shame were the two reasons that had me using for the years that I used. And I tell you this little story. I was telling you about the four lanes going up or going downtown. And there would be a guy like in the second lane on the right side of me who wouldn't turn his signal on, wouldn't turn his left turn signal on, and he'd fucking cut right in front of me. Self-righteous. I'm going to teach you a lesson. Do you know who you're messing with? I'm so glad I went through what I went through to get to where I am today. I'm at a place in my life that I can allow other people to be who they need to be. Yes, I'll get upset. Yes, I will. I'm only human. I will get upset. But I don't have to act off of those feelings. Don't. Not at all. I didn't know I had a choice in that matter. Today I realize I have that choice. One day I'm driving the cab, right? And I'm going up on 6th Avenue, Lou. And I'm heading towards like somewhere uptown. And this lady is in the cab with me. And this guy cuts me off, right? He makes a left on 53rd, heading west. And I'm supposed to be going north, right? What do you think Mark did? What do you think Mark did? Mark made the left turn. He didn't give a fuck with the lady who was going uptown. Because he wanted to get even with this guy. I got even with him. I'm a nut job. I know that. That's why I say, somebody up there cares for me. And somebody up there allowed me to do what I needed to do. But guess what happened? One day on St. Paddy's Day, I'm driving up 3rd Avenue. And St. Paddy's Day is an Irish celebration. And the whole East Side is all Irish, right? I'm driving up 3rd Avenue. I don't like people from my country. I'm biased. I'm freaking biased. Because you're not as educated as I am. Your mother was not a nurse like my mother was a nurse. You know, all that false image and ego. I don't like them guys because they all come from the villages. Like, I came from the big city. You came from the villages. You motherfucker, you don't know how to drive. You rode a camel or you ride on a donkey's back. What the fuck? This America has gone to the dogs. You're giving all these people licenses. What the fuck is happening over here? Just because I grew up naturally driving a car, I just have it in me, doesn't mean other people have it in them, right? And I got to accept those people that they don't have it. And they come here to make a living to support whatever they have to support, right? Now, this is not my thinking at the time, but today I think like that. He has the right like I have the right. And so what happened was, I was driving up 3rd Avenue, and this guy came across me like that on my right side and freaking cut me off. I'm like, yeah? Really? What do you think I did, CJ? I jumped in right behind him. I had to teach him a lesson. I had to tell him, yo, you know who you're fucking with, man? Bro, traffic, we made the turn and the traffic stopped. The traffic was backed up. I popped my trunk. I know you guys call it the dicky like we do in India. I popped my trunk. Jumped, ran. Yo, my reflexes. I'm very, very reactive. Very reactive. I mean, between that action and feeling, there's no connection. Like, boom, out. Took out the tire iron that we, you know, loosened the lug nuts on the wheel when we want to change the tires. Walked up to his car, ran up, he's in front of me, ran up to his car, pow! Hit his fucking windshield, right? Who was behind Mark? I'm a legend in my own mind, right? And I did this shit a number of times and got away with it. So my disease said, you're the best, bro. They're going to get you. They're going to get you. Undercover was right behind me. Undercover. He came up to my cab. He said, get out. I was walking back to my cab after I smashed his windshield, right? Turned the lights on. He said, come here, man. They get in the car. They cuff me. They put me in the back seat. Guess what? A normal person would learn from that one experience, right? I didn't learn. I wanted to be revengeful now. I wanted to kill everybody I saw, right? Brother and sisters, all my friends in Narcotics Anonymous told me, Mark, we wish you a slow recovery. I was like, you fucking Mark, wish me a slow recovery. Do you know what I'm going through? You don't know what I'm going through. And they even labeled me. Up in Harlem, there were guys that used to call me. They used to call me Elephant Man. I wanted to fucking punch you. You don't know nothing about where I come from, right? And then I would come in the rooms and we'd be talking about the steps. And I, like I said, I'm not a kind of guy to hold back. I tell it like it is. And I always spoke about my anger and my unmanageability. And when I talk about unmanageability, I'm not talking to working, going to work on time. I did that. I knew how to do that. I had to do that because I had to get my money. But I'm talking about emotional unmanageability that was stunted as a teenager because I couldn't grow up accepting life on life terms. I was shooting dope. So now I had to start growing up emotionally. I say, we wish you slow recovery. I'm a drug addict. I want instant gratification. I don't want to work for it. I want instant gratification, just like the drugs gave me instant gratification. So you know the wisdom to know the difference we talk about in our serenity prayer. Now let me tell you. Guys put labels on me. It says, Angry Mark. I'm going to say, shut the fuck up, man. It's none of your business, man. Do what I do. And let me see if you can handle it like I'm handling it. Right? So it's very important, man, for me as a drug addict, is to allow people to be where they're at. Not tell them, oh, you're living the first step. You're not living the first step. That's not my job. I hear a lot of people going around, oh, you're not doing this, oh, you're not doing that. My sponsors never, ever told me, Mark, you're not living the step. They would ask me, Mark, you did that, right? Okay, we got you. Who's feeling the pain, Mark? Who's feeling the pain? I'm feeling the pain. They said, you want to change that? I said, I don't know. I'm reactive. You know, that 6 and 7 steps saved me from me. And if I'm saving me from me, it means you're saved from me. There's nothing intellectual. There's no intellectualizing the steps for me. This is about living the steps. Yeah, I can sound good. I can talk about the spiritual principle behind the step. Yeah. And I can tell you all about the active spiritual principle behind the step. I did all that shit. But it didn't change my behavior. So the monster was alive, well, and living. And when this nice little boy, I was a nice little boy before I picked up drugs. Today, I'm becoming that nice little boy, one moment at a time. I don't even go for the 24 hour. I go for the moment. You know? That's how I live. I live every single moment. I live in the here and now. I'm driving. Immediately my head says, oh, go fuck that guy up, man. I like, we talk about having that moment of reprieve from our thoughts to our feelings to our action. Never had that. Today, I have that. And I don't do it every time. Don't get me wrong. I still fuck around. So now, when I'm practicing the 6th step and I'm driving, my mind has started. I can say, relax, bro. Relax. That's not where you want to be. That's not where you want to go. That moment of reprieve. Between my head and my action. That is the biggest blessing. Not gratitude. Blessing. Because I know what I'm capable of doing. And today, I can see myself going there. Previously, I couldn't see myself going there. All right, I got 5 minutes. I want to share about, this is my recovery. This has been my growth. You know, having the gift of life. There's no separating recovery from life and life from recovery. It's one thing for me. So when I got, I didn't even look at the title, man. Didn't even look at the title. I got a son, my big boy, my life, my blood. I got two sons. It's going to be 28 next month on the 7th of August. Right? That's all right. No, I don't. 1 second. This is very, very hard for me. And this is a new page for me. Being a parent, I don't know how many parents we have here, but being a parent is not easy, brother. And my boy don't use drugs and don't drink alcohol. But guess what he has? He lives in Texas. He carries two guns. And who is he like? Daddy. I know I can't change him. Intellectually, I know that. I'd like to give him program. Surrender. Leave him alone. I did that. And he cussed me out. And he knows I'm in recovery. He knows that. He came to me with meetings when he was a little boy. I take him in the stroller. I take him to all the group picnics. He knows dad is in recovery. All the people in my support group said only one thing to me. They said, Mark, you can't change him. When I had a business for about 10 years, he would ride with me in my delivery truck. Mark was acting like a knucklehead. You know that, right? Where did he learn that behavior from? He watched me. But I have hope. I know that I was a bad example to him when he was a young kid. But today he's 28 and he can see his dad doing the right thing. Sometimes I don't even know if it's for the right reason. People say, do the right thing for the right reason. I'm like, what? I don't know what that is. And all my friends tell me today. And out of four of us in my family, my wife, my other son, me and my big guy, guess who he calls and texts the most? That is because of this effing program. Not because I know what I'm doing, because I live the steps. I can quote from the book, like I said. But the pain, the misery, and the suffering that I can bring upon me, nobody else can bring upon me. I am my own worst enemy. And today, I am my own best friend. So what has happened was, my son sees his dad today. He's in Texas. Whenever the cops stop him, and he always gets stopped by the cop because he drives like a maniac New York driver, cutting people, doing all this shit. He's just like me. And you can't do that in Texas, not have the cops pull you over. He gets pulled over at least 3 or 4 times a month. And my heart is in my mouth, man. When's he going to get shot? Somebody's going to shoot him. So that's how this program has worked for me. I am accepting life on life's terms. I cannot expect life to go the way that I want it to go. 2 minutes, bro. This is a very important line for me. All my friends said, Mark, Just because you're clean and you're trying to do the right thing doesn't mean other people should live the way you want to live. Other people are going to be what other people are. You have the lack of acceptance. And that's why I say, call my brother Cliff. Cliffy, stand up, brother. I met these guys on Zoom meetings. I met these guys in Amsterdam on a Sunday morning. I met Cliff. And today, after COVID and nearly 5 years of being on these Zoom meetings, I get to get hugs from them. And that is a miracle for me. I guess it's my time to shut up. I love you guys. I'm grateful to be clean another day. And the newcomers, bro, the third tradition talks about a desire to stay clean. It doesn't say you must stay clean. But you know what? Keep coming here to these meetings, bro. That's where I started to see myself and others. And that's why I'm freaking up here today. So thank you, guys. Thank you for letting me share. Love all you guys, man.